data mining the haystack. Should you attempt to overload the NSA's servers with suspicious email keywords? Originally published at the Last Bastille blog on February 18th of 2016, read to you by the author. The problem was not that we weren't collecting information. It wasn't that we didn't have enough dots. It wasn't that we didn't have a haystack. It was that we did not understand the haystack that we have. The problem with mass surveillance is that we're piling more hay on a haystack we already don't understand. And this is the haystack of the human lives of every American citizen in our country. If these programs aren't keeping us safe, they're making us miss connections, vital connections, on information we already have. If we're taking resources away from traditional methods of investigation, from law enforcement operations that we know work, if we're missing things like the Boston Marathon bombings, where all of these mass surveillance systems, where every domestic dragnet in the world didn't reveal guys that the Russian intelligence service told us about by name, is that really the best way to protect our country? Or are we trying to throw money at a magic solution that's not just costing us our safety, but our rights and our way of life? Edward Snowden. Misinformation abounds when it comes to mass data mining. Typically, the federal government will either deflect attention by stressing they are collecting only foreign intelligence, not domestic intelligence, or that they are only collecting metadata, not the content of your communications. Whether it be by way of the USA Patriot Act's Section 215 or FISA's Section 702, the fact of the matter is that any hypothetical limits imposed by these statutory laws don't matter, and the constitutionality of them even less so, considering the history of the unconstitutional National Security Agency. All of these excuses for strictly foreign and or metadata intelligence gathering by the NSA is really quite spurious for two major reasons: Echelon and the Utah Data Center. Back in July of 2001, the European Union Parliament issued a report that admitted to the existence of Echelon as a signals intelligence, or SIGINT, network of the Five Eyes Intelligence Alliance, which was established by the UK-USA agreement. The Utah Data Center was exposed a few years ago as being part of both Stellar Wind as well as the Department of Defense's Global Information Grid, which handles data to the magnitude of yottabytes. That's equivalent to 1 trillion terabytes. Between Echelon and the Utah Data Center, the NSA has no practical or technical reason to limit its own power, given that the NSA collects domestic intelligence, including content, through their foreign allies who spy on Americans. And then they store all that information in approximately $2 billion worth of cloud computing. Despite all this, there is still a naive belief in the virtues of reformism. It matters not that the FISA Amendments Act, the reform of the reform, as it were, expanded the scope and authority of Section 702, but rather the fact that surveillance programs like PRISM, Muscular, and X-Keyscore were only possible because each one of them were an expansion upon the Five Eyes' Echelon system, which itself exploits the internet's backbone. What I inferred from a few declassified FISC rulings from over 2 years ago was that this whole bundling claim is disingenuous too, because if the NSA knew from a purely technical standpoint that indiscriminate data mining was unavoidable, then they shouldn't be doing it at all, simply due to the fact that such bulk data collection is at least a search, if not also a seizure, of one's papers and effects through the internet, and is therefore a blatant violation of the Fourth Amendment. No amount of reforming the NSA is even applicable to GCHQ, CSC, ASD, or GCSB in the first place, especially in terms of curbing their espionage against the communications of the American citizenry. Taking this as a given, the NSA has got to put all that SIGINT they got from their foreign allies somewhere, right? William Binney, a NSA whistleblower, warned that the Utah data center engaged in deep packet inspection of email specifically. This distinction made by government apologists between foreign versus domestic spying is largely irrelevant, not only because of the Five Eyes network, but also the fact that many email servers are themselves located offshore and therefore susceptible to SIGINT espionage by the NSA. The reason the Utah data center is geared towards storing yottabytes worth of information is simply because that very intelligence is not just metadata, but content as well. Otherwise, they wouldn't need that kind of storage space now, would they? Remember, the federal government still insists on exercising its state's secrets privilege as a matter of public policy. So you have to ask yourselves, do you honestly think that any high-level government official would be willing to brazenly lie to the public if by doing so he would be preserving classified national security procedures? Congress critter Hank Johnson questioned then-NSA Chief General Keith Alexander about the NSA's technical capability in intercepting SIGINT during a congressional subcommittee hearing on March 20th of 2012, before the Snowden leaks. The general flat-out denied in his testimony that the NSA collected bulk data of Americans' communications, including content. Consider also these statements made by Barack Obama back on July 7th of 2013, this would be post-Snowden, where he did admit that the NSA collected metadata on American citizens. And a few selected quotes from that are, quote, "Nobody is listening to your telephone calls. Now, with respect to the internet and emails, it does not apply to U.S. citizens, and it does not apply to people living in the United States. They do not involve listening to people's phone calls, do not involve reading the emails of U.S. citizens or U.S. residents," close quote. Now, if all of this email and phone surveillance is unquestionably and completely legal, then would El Presidente please be kind enough to explain to everyone why there are as many credible NSA whistleblowers as there are? Is the tyrant in chief implying that they are all just exaggerated a bit too much and therefore deserved all of the harassment and sometimes outright persecution they face? Or is there serious foul play afoot? Decades ago, William Knowles suggested that it might be worth overloading the NSA servers with suspicious keywords. Fast forward to 2013, when Vice attempted to do just that with its Hello NSA random keyword-laced message generator. Yet, this was more of an attempt to hamper the ability of the NSA to data mine social media websites for open source intelligence, as evidenced by DHS's redacted 2011 Analyst's Desktop Binder. Concurrently, there was a similar attempt to obfuscate the value of any bulk data collection, as well as call the president's bluff that the NSA does not listen to phone calls or read emails by Operation Troll the NSA, which encouraged the public to call and or email a script containing these suspicious keywords on the same day. Naturally, as is typical with all critical mass protests, there was no measurement metric taken by which to gauge the effectiveness of such a presumably widespread action. Let's talk shop, shall we? The average email size is roughly 75 kilobytes without attachments. If we make an assumption that the Utah data center has a maximum storage capacity of a single yottabyte and divide that by the average email size, it would take 40 quintillion emails to fill it, given that one yottabyte equals one sextillion kilobytes. Since the total American population is estimated to be 323 million people, and assuming that each one of them sent out 100 emails a day without fail, then it would take them 80 billion years to reach the Utah data center's presumed maximum capacity. I think you can tell by the results of my calculations that the average email is the smallest conceivable file size, whereas the Utah Data Center is the largest conceivable set of cloud computing servers. Therefore, this presumption that nearly innumerable swarms of keyword-laden emails could ever make the slightest of dents into overwhelming the NSA servers is pure foolishness. If you were to attempt such a dent, it would have been better to use the largest conceivable file size that has the highest possibility of successful file transferal without interruption or glitches, such as those videos that feature 10 hours of elevator music. Obviously, this would be something akin to the black fax method, which attempts to run the black ink within printers dry through sheer waste. It is more than fair to say that the efficacy of email keywords overloading the NSA servers has not been proven. What evidence and arguments have been presented here are a critique that is offered in good faith. Advocates of this method bear the burden of proof for demonstrating its efficacy, not me or any other critics. Suffice it to say, I don't think those proponents have met their burden of proof, and what evidence is available suggests that their purported method is unfeasible, especially considering the obvious failure that was Operation Troll the NSA. What is the solution here, then, if not overloading the NSA servers with suspicious email keywords? The solution is, therefore, not using keywords to either trip or overload anything, but rather encryption. In this case, since the concern is about emails being data mined and read by intelligence analysts, the specific encryption type would be pretty good privacy, or PGP. Nearly 2 years ago, I wrote two different tutorials for configuring PGP with your operating system, one for a Windows OS and another for a Mac OS. Within the EU Parliament's 2001 report about Echelon, they recommended the use of encrypted email. Quote, "In contrast to telephones, emails can and should be encrypted by everyone. The oft-repeated claim that a person has no secrets and thus has no need to encrypt messages must be countered by pointing out that written messages are not normally sent on postcards. However, an unencrypted email is nothing other than a letter without an envelope. The encryption of emails is secure and relatively straightforward, and user-friendly systems such as PGP or GNUPG are already available, even free of charge, to private individuals on the internet. Unfortunately, they are not yet sufficiently widely distributed. The public authorities should set a good example and themselves employ encryption as a standard practice in order to demystify the process." Close quote. Now, GNUPG is sufficiently widely distributed, and considering the prevalence of cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin, any excuses of computer illiteracy simply get tossed out of the window for the rubbish that it is. As long as you have electricity and internet access, you can use PGP encrypted emails once it's been configured. Since the NSA is indiscriminately data mining nearly everyone, I'm sure they've got a copy of Hillary Clinton's missing Benghazi emails, am I right? Either way, the more serious issue is that too many American dissidents of various ideologies are, oddly enough, stubbornly consistent in their practice of making all manner of excuses in order to not practice good security culture. If they took one-tenth of that effort in avoiding the practice of security culture techniques and redirected it towards learning these methods, then they'd already be using them well enough for it to be beneficial to them. Why there is this tendency to needlessly increase one's opportunity cost is a mystery I intend to solve, for it would explain their aversion towards what does work, as well as their attraction for what does not work, in terms of helping them secure their own personal liberty. You've just heard Data Mining the Haystack. Should you attempt to overload the NSA servers with suspicious email keywords? Originally published at the Last Bastille blog on February 18th of 2016,